This is the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. Join us as we hear from students across the Portland area and beyond. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS broadcasting students at Benson High School. Full episodes of the Student Hour are available on our website, kbps.am. For over 100 years, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. The Student Hour is brought to you by Portland Radio Project, KBOO Community Radio, and KBPS. This is the Student Hour.
Hallo, Ayath Vala. I am Josiah on KBPS Portland with PRP, and I'm here to talk about a person who's very important in the Middle East, Indonesia, and China, or at least a few parts there, named Ibn Battuta, a great world traveler who traveled farther than Zheng He and Marco Polo. So first, we're going to start off with, who was Ibn Battuta? Well, he was a man who was born in Tangier in North Africa, and he was a qadi, like a kind of judge of sorts. And he, when he was 21, decided to go on a trip to Mecca, which is it's a yearly thing in Islamic faith. And so he went on that pilgrimage. He found a train of people, and he followed the pilgrimage to Mecca. On his way, he had encountered many hermits, many people who were very wise and lived in solitude by choice. And so he learned a lot from them, about the Islamic faith and also where he intended to go in life. A lot of them said that he would end up settling down in India. This is probably because India was looking for Qadi at the time, but whatever. So he traveled to Mecca, learned a bunch in Mecca about everything, about all of the things in Islamic faith, because knowledge travels through Mecca. Like they pass books and they build libraries in Mecca. So after he was done in Mecca, he decided to go to India. But first, he had to make a side trip by going to Russia for no other reason other than he wanted to see it. So on his way to Russia, he ended up going through Saudi Arabia. There was a tradition happening around this time. This is in 1400s Middle East, by the way. And so he went into Saudi Arabia, and there was this festival happening where people had lit coals on fire and they were putting them out in any way they could. So they would roll over on the coals to put them out. Some people put them in their mouths for some reason. And one guy used a snake to put out the fire. And he was really, really I want to say he was disgusted by what he saw, because he had never seen Islam like this. He was outside of his main homeland, which was very, very, very traditionally Islam. And so this was a new area of Islam he'd never seen before. So this was all very interesting to him. He went north up towards what was known as the Kievan Rus at the time, but is now known as Ukraine. And he had found people there who were Islamic, but they had blonde hair and blue eyes, and they drank beer and meat, like Vikings, basically. And he was just surprised by this as well. He'd never seen anybody who really had blonde hair and blue eyes. So very different environment to him. He did end up going down to India anyways after this, but not before making another trip to Mecca, just to really, really make sure he'd done his time in Mecca. So he went back, he got a bunch of knowledge again, and then he went on his trip to India. And I don't actually remember what happened on that trip, but I do know that when he did make it to India, he found the Khan riding on an elephant into India with a whole caravan of people, a train. And it was, that's how he knew. That's how he knew. He saw the golden train of the Indian Khan, and he knew that he had made his home. The Khan, after meeting him, gave him tons of money, tons of women, and a lot of slaves as well, which that was a very big thing in the Middle East at this time, was slavery, but that's kind of been a thing in old Europe as well. But either way, he met the Khan. He was given women, slaves, money, food, clothing, everything he wanted, even elephants. He was given elephants. And the Khan was actually so happy to meet him, he made him the official Qadi of India, just right off the bat. No, like, introductions, no nothing. Just immediately, you are the official Qadi of India, which he was very, very surprised by this, Ibn Battuta was, and he just did not agree with that, because he had already been given so much. He didn't think that the Khan was going to be this eccentric and just give him anything. So he tried to push back, but he couldn't. One thing Ibn Battuta later found out about and he was very scared of was the executions that this man would place. He would execute people with elephants, which he had trained to use swords by tying swords to their tusks. So Ibn Battuta did not want to end up being on that side. And he also didn't want to be hung. So he tried to do the Khan's work as much as he could. But after, like, a long, long time of being under the rule of the Khan, eventually the Khan got mad at him for something, I forget. But the Khan was upset, and so he sent Ibn Battuta to prison. For the next 3 weeks he was in prison, he was preparing himself to die. Like, he was fully expecting to come out of this whole thing on the ends of an elephant. He did not know what was going to happen. But after 3 weeks, the Khan took him out of his cell and just introduced himself as if he was a friend. Just absolutely normal. Wasn't going to kill him at all. Which, I mean, you know, it might not surprise you, but obviously Ibn Battuta took this opportunity to figure out how to leave India. Because at this time, people of his high position were not just allowed to leave. So he had to find a loophole. But, I mean, that is a lot of stress to put on somebody. Like, literally making them believe they're going to die for 3 weeks. So, of course, he had to find a loophole in the law to get out. The loophole he found was religious leave. So he was figuring, why don't I go on a third trip to Mecca? But the problem was the pilgrimage was already over. So instead, he made his own little pilgrimage, I believe. And he just walked to Mecca and then didn't come back. He just went in a cave and he lived there as a hermit for a while until the Khan said, hey, I need you to come back because we're making new laws and I need you to be here for this. Or I'm making trade and peace negotiations with China. So he had to head back to India. Anyways, he headed back and the Khan of India said to him, we got to figure out how to like trade with China. Basically, that's what it was. So I'm going to send you on a trip to go to China and to give them goods and loot, and then you can come right on back. But I need you to give them what we have for trade. So he made a trip to Indonesia to ship out to China. So he went to Indonesia, on his way to Indonesia, he was robbed. There were some bandits who came across him and stole everything except him. They left him and he just walked to a new town. And he tried to get some food and water. The only thing he has is his tunic, his shirt, his pants, and his boots. So he goes to a town and he asks for water, and then people rob him again. And now he only has his shirt, his pants, and his boots, and his dignity. So he goes to the next town. On his way there, he tried to get water out of a well using his boot. And the boot fell in. So now he has a boot, his shirt, and his pants. And his dignity. And so he goes to the next town. He tries asking for food. And he's robbed of his shirt. And so now he has his pants and his boot and no dignity. It's just, it's gone. He was robbed so much already. So he goes to the next town over and he finds that his caravan is there, just left. And so, reacquainted with his things, he leaves and he goes to Indonesia. And when he gets there, everything is set up for him. Although on his ship, he finds that he does not have the most important room on the ship. So he's obviously upset about that. So he throws a fit. I mean, you know, he sat in a cave learning discipline and how to be patient, but I mean, he just can't live with having not the most important first class room on a ship. So he freaks out at the people. He gets the equivalent of a manager or what was the ship captain at the time. And he is like, I need you to give me a first class room. I am the official Qadi of India and underneath the Khan of India. And then they're like, okay, fine. We can't put you on the first ship, but we will put you on the second and first class. And he's like, finally. Oh. So now first class achieved. He goes on to land and he starts praying before a voyage. The only problem is a huge storm comes in and the ships have to leave early. So they get all of his stuff onto the second ship and then the ships leave. The first ship that he was going to be on crashes and the second one leaves without him. All of his stuff on its way to China. He has no way of getting to it and he is not on that ship. So he doesn't know what to do for like a day or two. And then he figures out he can go on a different trade route to get to the Malaysia Islands, then go to Indonesia, and then go to China. So he does just that. He goes to the islands. They take him to Indonesia. Sorry. And then he goes to China. Now, the reports we have from China at this time are that it was very diverse. It was still under the rule of a Khan, and that Ibn Battuta was the last real written record of what China looked like at this point. Because after this, the Black Death hit Europe. But it hit Asia. And so now China was falling. But this is before that happens yet. But in China, Ibn Battuta is in a place of absolute backwardness. Even the poorest of beggars wear silk, which is a rare, rare material. Everyone is rich here. The houses are immaculate but expensive. And he cannot find anyone, really, who is Islamic. He finds some people from Syria, and he finds other people from Morocco and other areas, but he hardly finds anybody who believes in Islam. And so anytime he does meet somebody that believes in Islam, he treats them as his own brothers. The problem is that because this is a new land, Ibn Battuta doesn't know how to adjust. And like one big thing about Ibn Battuta was that he's kind of a nosy person. He really likes to point out the laws and say what's right and what's wrong. So if you do something like a little bit wrong, he'd be the kind of guy to yell at you and say, do it right. So being in an area where everything is so different from Islam is, of course, very shocking and surprising. And so he doesn't actually stay very long in China, and he leaves after like a week or two. And he's on his way back to India. On his way back to India, though, the Black Death hits. And so he heads to India only to find basically everyone ill, including the guards. And now he figures is the best time to leave India and head back home because the Khan can't really enforce any laws if all of the guards are suffering from a sickness. So he left India and he went straight back to his home. He left his home at 21 and he came back at the age of 45. He finds back home that his parents are dead, and so is his brother. His mom succumbed to the Black Death, and his dad succumbed to old age. He lost, like, everything. The only thing that he had left was his sister as a family member and a bunch of, I mean, not a bunch, but an amount of money. He didn't have, like, a whole lot at this point. And so he was really only able to move around on horseback and just hope that he finds somewhere. And I know that he went to northeastern Africa, and he found, I forget who it is. It was the leader of one of the countries there in like, I think, Egypt. And he was elected as the official Qadi of Mali. The Mali Empire is important because it's when they're very famous for their gold. The biggest king that came out of it was Mansa Musa. He was such a huge figure that he's literally on maps, like, as a guy holding gold, because he spread out so much gold on his trip to Mecca that he actually bankrupted or he crushed the economy on gold on accident just because he was so generous. So Ibn Battuta, heading to this place, kind of thought that he was going to get a bunch of gold. He went to central... Okay, he met a bunch of people outside of Mali who were traveling on mule and horseback and who would be able to bring him to Mali. And they would have to go on a pretty long trip, but he would go anyways. So he goes on this trip to Mali, and they stop by a salt town where the houses are made of salt and the roofs are made of salt, but nobody lives here except slaves, and their whole job is to mine salt and carry it around. So after a while of being here, they finally, this is the thing about going to Mali at this time, is that it's so barren of water that they have to have a guy come from central Mali shipping water to the people shipping other supplies like gold. So they get their water shipment, and then they go back on their way to central Mali. He does end up making it, and he finds that it is not entirely Islam. It is mostly, or it's half converted. The people there are like four generations of Islamic people, but they still celebrate the religion of the Mali people, like the old traditional ways, which makes him uncomfortable because, as I already said, he was uncomfortable in China, and he was also kind of uncomfortable in Indonesia, but he went to an area of Indonesia where Islam was, but you get the idea. He was uncomfortable in this environment because it wasn't entirely Islamic. He talks to the leader, and the leader doesn't actually give him any money. He only gives him, like, food. And it wasn't until Ibn Battuta was leaving that he actually got gold from other cities outside of, like, other cities that are partnered with Mali but aren't exactly Mali. And so he was very thankful for that. And I'd like to skip ahead a little bit because he is very, very well known and celebrated today. In the town of Tangier, he actually, there's restaurants named after Ibn Battuta where you can buy meals based around his journeys. There's an Ibn Battuta airport in Tangier where each wall is decorated with his journeys. There is even Ibn Battuta restaurants in China and in Indonesia. So yeah, he's pretty important. And I'm pretty sure in Indonesia, along with a lot of the Middle East, they also have, they have Ibn Battuta holidays, like, or not holidays. They have parades where they bring out like giant floats that are celebrated for him, because for this time he traveled largely on trade routes during this time, and so he actually allows us to see 1400s trade routes and travels, how they were, and actually the dangers that you could come across and what these bandits might have looked like. So he's a pretty important figure, and I'm really happy to actually have done all this research on him. And this is actually going to be the end of my my KBPS PRP this week. But thank you for listening to KBPS Hour on PRP or Portland Radio. Have a good one.
If you'd like to support the Student Hour, please consider donating to our program at kbps.am and donating to our sponsors, Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like the Student Hour stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click on the big red heart.
Hello, KBPS. This is Travis, and today I have Jacob Patterson with me today. Hey, Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Travis. Great to talk with you, buddy. Hope all is well on your end.
I'm doing okay as well. So I've heard that very soon we are going to celebrate our 100th anniversary broadcast. How do you feel about that?
It's time to party like it's 1923. That's right. In fact, March 23, 1923 was the day that this radio station was first licensed to broadcast. And holy moly, 100 years. It's not every day you turn 100 years old, and to have been a former student of the program, this program helped launch me into my career, and now to come back as the instructor of the program, I mean, I'm speechless. My job as a communicator is to come up with the right words at the right times, and I'm still speechless when I think about the significance of this, the gravity of this, all of the generations that have come before us to get us to where we are today, and now the torch is in my hands to carry it on into the next 100 years. And I'm so excited. We got a huge party planned. We got a big broadcast planned. A lot of local media are coming out and talking with us. We're doing interviews with TV stations. We got Willamette Week right here, right now, doing some interviews and photos for us. So it's kind of a big deal.
Thank you for listening. That was actually really interesting. About like just KBPS and celebrating its 100th year anniversary. What was like one of your favorite memories, and why was it your favorite of like all time?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard. For me, there's a couple of highlights. I am part of the very first ever Skills USA National Gold Medal winning team from KBPS. In 2006, we competed in the Skills USA competition, which is like an academic competition. Think of it as like school Olympics. So the radio students make radio productions. The construction people have a construction competition. The automotive students have an automotive competition. And students get to compete in their fields. And then if you win in the state competition, you get to go on to the national competition. That's what we did in radio, and we were part of the first KBPS gold medal winning team, and that was so cool. It's historic. Of course, you know, some of my high school days have faded out in my memory, but some of the things that I can still recall. I remember having a great time in class and having fun on the air with my on-air partner. And we would try to make, when we would do our live newscast at the top of the hour or bottom of the hour, whoever was reading the newscast, the other person would make funny faces and try to make your partner laugh or crack up in the middle of the news story. And a couple of times we got each other to crack. And I can remember just having fun and doing silly little high school things, but still learning, you know, important life skills about communication that have helped me throughout my entire life. One of the things that just I remember on Summer Sound, on the Summer Sound crew of 2006, we were at the old Benson, which was right across the street from that Franz Bakery. And we got word that Franz Bakery was getting ready to break a Guinness World Record, the world's longest hot dog. They literally built a bun that was like over 100 feet long, and they had a hot dog trucked in that was continuous, unbroken. And we did a live report on Summer Sound on KBPS from the scene of the story, world's longest hot dog. Some of those things are the things that I can remember and stand out to me. But I mean, it's been amazing. It's been a heck of a ride.
Yeah, that's incredible. Thinking about it, like, so many people are breaking so many Guinness World Records, like, everywhere in the world. But also, just staying on track of, like, just the KBPS, like, broadcast center, what would you do if there was, like, no KBPS, like, no radio station, like, suddenly it just stopped, dropped dead, and nothing was said about it?
I think I still would have been doing some sort of music-related or audio production-related hobbies. Before KBPS, I was still involved in this world pretty well. I remember fondly my grandfather teaching me how to put tapes over the corners of cassettes so I could record over a cassette. And I got a little cassette boombox one year for Christmas, and I would go and record my favorite songs off the radio. So I had a copy of my favorite songs, and I would make my own mixtapes, and I would pretend to be radio DJ when, gosh, I was probably 7 or 8 years old. You know, those stereotypical radio DJ stories. It's the truth. And I can remember some of my earliest memories, my hanging out with my grandpa, who's no longer... died many years ago, but when he was around, he had a CB radio in his pickup truck, and he would talk around town with people on CB. Hey, breaker out there, 10-4, good buddy, I need a radio check, call her on back, yeah. And I remember jumping in the truck with Grandpa and talking on the CB radio and pushing a button and talking into this little weird device thing, and somebody on the other side of the city can hear me and talk back to me, and that was magical to me. That was like, whoa, that blew my mind, and that was... when I was 7, 8, 9 years old, somewhere around there. So if there was no KBPS, the truth is I would have majored in automotive in high school. I just got, you know, I was getting my first car. I wanted to learn how my car worked. I almost became an automotive major anyway. So I probably still would play around with my own personal audio recordings, and I probably would have been an automotive major.
Thank you, Jacob, so much. I have one more question. Even as... KBPS, you are a teacher / running like a radio station. Is that like difficult for you? Is it like, honestly, like, I feel like that would be a lot of work, like grading like homework, making sure you have the right assignments, and then making sure like the radio station doesn't have dead air. I feel like you're doing like two things at once. How do you do it? And do you feel like it's a difficulty for you to be a teacher?
Travis, is a great question, and you want me to be 100% honest with you. It's very challenging. Being a teacher is one of the most difficult jobs I've ever had, but thanks to a career in commercial radio, thanks to KBPS, I'm well prepared. As a commercial radio producer, as a news editor for one of the biggest radio stations in town, I would get up at 1 o'clock in the morning. I would have a good grip on all the breaking news by 2 o'clock. We were on at the radio station by 3, on the air at 5, and at home and in bed by noon. And constantly multitasking, not just, you know, covering the news, reporting on the news, producing the news, running the radio station, and you wear a bunch of different hats all at once. You're constantly multitasking. And that kind of preparation was really good for being a teacher, because that's exactly what I do as a teacher. I'm teaching students. I'm recording interviews. I'm producing audio. I'm running a station. I'm making sure that everybody pushed their chairs in. I'm trying to maintain some of the equipment. When students come in and they push the wrong button, and I got to fix all those kinds of things. I'm helping run the Bats Club. I'm doing sports casting. And I'm running the bowling thing. And we just got back from a historic first ever in school history, girls at the state bowling championship, epic, unforgettable weekend. The truth is it's tough. It's hard. I've got to take really good care of myself. I got to eat well. I've got to sleep well. I have to tell, you know, my buddies when they call me up, hey, let's go out and party tonight, man. I said, sorry, I've got to work. I've got to do. I have to say no to some things that I would really love to go do, but I've got to put my job first a lot of time. And my job really as a teacher and as a broadcaster is it's a performance, right? And so as a performer, sometimes I kind of put on a show, like, what you see on the surface might not necessarily be what's going on the inside. I am exhausted. I'm dead tired. I am drinking a cup of coffee at 2:30 in the afternoon trying to maintain my performance. And on the inside, I'm dying tired, but I don't let that show because I've got a job to do. So the truth is we do the best we can. You take good care of yourself, eat well, sleep well. And sometimes I have to say no to that Friday night party that I really want to go to.
Well, Jacob, that sounds like that's just a lot of things that you do as just like a teacher and a radio broadcaster. I swear you need to get paid more as a teacher because you're doing extra work. Like, you're doing so many things on top of the things you do, and sometimes you're not even getting paid for it, which I feel like you're getting cheated out of your own job. That's just my personal experience. I'm not trying to say anything else, but so...
Well, Travis, real quick, I appreciate that, but what I would say is you have to go above and beyond. You have got to make yourself indispensable. If you can make yourself indispensable, what that means is that you do so much that the boss can't do it without you. Once you get to the point where they rely on you and they need you, I mean, they need me to do all the audio here at the school for all the assemblies. They need me to do bats. They need me to do sports casting. And now if something were to happen, and which is actually happening next year, Portland Public Schools is coming up about $40 or $50 million short. There's a budget shortfall. There's going to be some teacher layoffs. And I am doing everything I can to make sure that I'm not going to be one of the people laid off because I love my job. I want to keep my job. And the way that I do that is I go and I do all of these things. I don't just do the bare minimum. Doing the bare minimum is not enough. You've aim for that A. You've got to aim for that A. Don't aim for a C and land on an F. Aim for the A and land on a B. And if you become an A student and eventually an A employee, they can't do the job without you. And at that point, you have job security. And then you can confidently go to work every day knowing that, no, there's no one that's going to take my job because they couldn't do it without me.
Wow. That was just a lot to take in. Jacob?
It's like drinking off of a fire hydrant. It's coming at you fast.
It's all right. Jacob?
Which I don't recommend, by the way. That would probably blow your face off.
Jacob, just one bonus question for you. If you had a quote to tell everybody who's listening onto the radio right now, what would it be?
The best advice anyone ever gave me, they said, if there's something out there that you want, go get it.
Like rush, like go for it, like hustle and stuff?
Yeah. If there's something out there that you want, go get it. It's as simple as that. If you want to become a superstar, you can do it. If you want to become the president of the United States, you can do it. If you want to be the next radio broadcaster, you can do it. If you want to be the next Phil Knight, you can do it. But you've got to put in the work. Don't do the bare minimum. Go above and beyond. Do what's asked. Do what's expected. And then do extra. And then when you're so tired you can't do anymore, you do more. And you keep going. And then pretty soon you're dialed in and your work ethic is unmatched and you become the next whatever you want to be. If there's something out there you want, go get it.
Well, thank you, Jacob, for letting me interview you about this upcoming 100th anniversary, which I'm super excited for. I've never thought I would be in something so important that has been almost like 10 times as old as me, thinking about I would never be... When I was first trying to do this class, I never thought radio broadcast would be my kind of thing when I first ever went to school. I was like, oh, maybe I could like do computer programming, and I thought that was my thing. No, radio is my thing. I love talking. I realize how much I can do things in radio that I'd never thought I'd ever do. So thank you for interviewing, Jacob.
Well, and Travis, you are already on your way to being one of those superstars. You come to class every day. You're going to the great attendance celebration because you have great attendance. You're part of BATS. You're part of the bowling team. You're an A student in the radio broadcasting program. You are doing it, man, and just keep doing it and keep doing more and more and more and more. And real quick, for all of our KBPS family listening, there's information about the 100th anniversary on our website, kbps.am.
Thank you.
Hello, it's Joe from KBPS, here to present the KBPS playlist, where a different student each week shows off the music they're listening to right now, and I'm happy to present mine for the second time. And surprise, surprise, it's Judas Priest again. Absolutely wonderful song from a killer artist, Electric Eye. Electric Eye by Judas Priest. Next up, a personal favorite of mine. Well, they're all favorites, but you know what I mean. Anyway, here's This Corrosion by the Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah.
and that'll be all for me today. You're listening to KBPS on PRP.
Good day, listeners, and thank you for listening to the KBPS Hour. My name is Zip, and I'll be continuing my semi-weekly segment where I review a song from an artist's album that was released recently. This week, I'll be doing the song Welcome to My Island by Caroline Polachek. Let's take a listen.
Welcome to my island. See the palm trees waving the wind. Welcome to my island. Hope you like me. You ain't leaving. Welcome to my island. See the palm trees waving the wind. Welcome to my island. Hope you like me. You ain't leaving.
Welcome to My Island feels like an opener from its title all the way through the structure, a rare beast of a track that holds itself as one with constant replay value. It has the best earworm qualities that only the best can rely on, yet marks a consistency for Polachek as a singer, and it pushes herself to the next level. Stunning that mixture of light bops and darker lyrical enticements may be, it is up to Polachek to make sure the rest of her album is up to that task, or at the very least in a similar place of quality. Welcome to My Island sets the bar incredibly high. That's all for now. My name is Zip, and I'll be back on next week's KBPS Hour.
1985. No one in sight. Maybe it's just you and I. You're my main attraction. Don't get me waiting. And we are just feeling alone tonight. Alone tonight. Baby, you're the one that's on my mind. On my mind. But I'm not coming home tonight. Home tonight. Home tonight. Home tonight.
The Student Hour, highlighting student voices from around Portland and beyond. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS broadcasting students at Benson High School. Full episodes of The Student Hour are available on our website, kbps.am. On air since 1923, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Thanks to our supporters, Portland Radio Project, KBOO Community Radio, and thanks to our listeners like you. This concludes our episode for today. For AM 1450 KBPS, I'm Joe Anderson. Thanks for joining us.